talk to someone today who says, that's not my truth? You can't just go back and forth of saying, this is truth. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Is there a way to talk to someone who denies the existence of fixed truth?
Let's see what the Bible says about that. Hey, welcome to the podcast. I'm glad you're here for this one. I'm super excited for how relevant this one is to our day. And I think this is going to help you out in the relationships that you have and learning how to talk to people who don't believe in objective truth, right? Ooh. So I would ask, if you're on YouTube, go ahead and subscribe to our channel. We've got podcasts coming out every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. And if you would like, that would be super great for us as well. Share it with someone. Comment down below if you have any thoughts, stories, questions, whatever it is.
Yeah. So I would say if you're over 40, make sure you listen all the way through. This will break your brain. This is the challenge for me. I'm over 40. Mm-hmm. Not so much for Truett. He's not. So you'll see two different ways of thinking. And the challenge will be to understand these two ways of thinking. One is not necessarily Christian and the other not Christian. Mm-hmm. We'll just say that. We'll get there, explain all this. So we live in an interesting time today, obviously for a lot of reasons, but it has a lot of labels upon this day, a post-Christian culture, you hear that. But we also live in a time that is defined as the post-modern era. Mm-hmm. Now, we should stop and frame that a little bit so we know what we're talking about here. The modern era was a time when society as a whole believed in fixed truth. There were universal truths that were agreed upon. And the way you came about making decisions was through rational thought, was through analysis of the facts, scientific process, and study and research. And then you put those together. You might debate with someone the facts that they had. And there was reason, there was logic, and then you came upon the idea of a conclusion, but it was all under the context of there is a universal truth. There are things that are right, there are things that are wrong, there are things that are true, there are things that are not true, there are things that are accepted, there are things that are not accepted, and this was true. This was true in culture, this was true in art, this was true in architecture, as we'll get into today. Even social order, there was a sense of there is simplicity, there is order, there's logic, and there's the basic formula, not formula, the basic forms were all agreed upon. But then comes along the postmodern era, the time after that, a time when all of a sudden things that were fixed are now not so fixed. A time when universal truth is rejected. And then now in this postmodern setting, truth is more defined by the moment, the context, the setting, sometimes even by feelings. And so this happens in every part of the culture. The things that were once rigid and fixed become broken away from the grid. So I began studying architecture in 1982. Mm-hmm. So I go to school. This is where I first hear these terms, modern and postmodern. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about what that meant.
Yeah, and not in the standpoint of like, there is objective truth and subjective
truth. No, and they weren't talking about that. They were talking about art or architecture, the way architecture had developed over the years. Mm-hmm. I took a lot of history and architecture, design, architecture. And so the modern era was the era when you had buildings that were built in very basic shapes. Mm-hmm. They were boxes. Mm-hmm. They were cubes. So you have the whole era of downtown office buildings comes out of the modern era. The ones that we think of that are the glass and the steel, and they're square and they're rigid and they're fixed. And then even you go back to some of the things that you may have seen in architecture that you might have thought, I would never live in that house, because it was a house that was like a white, stark cube. There was a flat roof and there was glass in the walls. And those are examples of the kind of extreme of modern architecture. You had everything that fit into a grid. I remember they asked us to design stuff like that. And so we would design these very modern looking pieces of architecture that was just a box and everything in it lined up on the grid. The walls lined up. They all made sense where they fit. The spaces connected in a very orderly way. But then they began to talk to us about something that was coming along called postmodern architecture. And in the postmodern architecture, they were all of a sudden breaking this grid. There were no longer just boxes that were square. They were no longer boxes that were cubes. No longer this white, stark building. But now all of a sudden, there were curves. There were shapes that didn't even make sense. Mm-hmm. There were things that, in place of what you thought was going to be another right angle, was something completely out of place. Mm-hmm. And color came into form in architecture. You started seeing textures and colors of buildings changing. And it was all during this postmodern. It was a way of leaving what was behind. It was all fascinating to watch all of that happen in that day.
Yeah, I mean, like, now, and I think that's fascinating that that was in the 80s, that is like coming onto the scene in the architecture realm of things. And then now what postmodernism looks like today is some other fancy terms like relativism.
Yes.
Truth is relative. You know, nothing is fixed. Just like the architecture thing. Like, hey, we should change things up.
Yep.
To just change things up.
Right.
Like, why do what we did when we can try to pioneer a new way? So you have the idea of relativism. Another fancy word is standpoint epistemology.
Sure.
Or this is truth based on how I view it. So therefore, from my standpoint, I'm ruling this as truth.
Okay.
You know, and so it's no
longer...
Which is
similar to my truth, your truth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is that of like, well, if you just saw things the way I saw them, you would then accept that my truth is the truth, and that it's the best way to be living life or whatever.
Yeah.
And so you have like people who have taken that on as like, this is now how I see life. This is my lens of life. It's not like, and these people who have been raised in this mentality as well. It's not just like, hey, we should like try doing a new thing. But no, these are people who have been raised being told, hey, what's true for you is your truth.
Yeah.
That's great. You know?
Yeah. It may not be true for me, but true for you.
Exactly.
Kind of deal, right.
So again, this is what we see in our culture now. The idea that there, you know, there's no more fixed, singular, objective, universal truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's all relative.
Yeah.
To each person to person and all this kind of stuff. You know, it's how you feel. It's what you feel. That's what the truth is. You know, if it makes you feel better, probably it's the truth, you know? And so truth is contextual. It's, you know, it's like based on things I've been in and been through and based on what this person needs, that's what the truth is. It's not fixed, you know? And then the rejection of long held societal norms.
Yeah.
Let's reject it and see what it is. See what it could be.
Right.
Because why not?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Kind of an idea.
Yeah. So yeah. Rejection of major institutions.
Yeah.
Whether it be church, government, even police, all of that's being just eliminated.
And then, of course, the most obvious one being marriage. Yeah. You know, the breaking down and deconstruction of marriage and the uniting of not traditional marriage.
Yep.
Just for why not?
Yeah.
This is my truth, isn't it? You know, this is how I feel. Mm-hmm. And you know, you again reject things like democracy or reject capitalism, and it's all done in the lens of this is my truth.
Yeah,
how bad could it be? You know,
and
this makes me feel better. And so you have people who have been taught, trained, indoctrinated, if you want to go there and say that word, in that way, and it has some pretty crazy repercussions.
Yeah, I think it might be fair to also say that perhaps postmodern thought comes at the end of modern thought because modern thought leads to this place that's pretty cold and dry.
Mm-hmm.
It's empty. It's it's too rigid. It's and there's no life to it. And so postmodern comes along like there has to be another way.
Yeah. And I think the start, if I remember correctly, I believe that the start of like postmodern thought started around the 50s, 50s, 60s, 70s. You kind of see it. And then obviously 80s. And I think it's like very low, like low simmer. idea of like postmodernism starting around then. Whereas in the 40s, you have World War II and you have like these huge events that have like organized the culture as to what it was. And then, right. like you're saying, modernism led to the like, there's no life in this. It is literally yeah. just like we're doing things because we have done them. And so,
yeah. Whether it be in the family structure, whether it be in a church mm-hmm. setting, whether it be in organizational theory and in the workplace, whatever it might be, you come to this place where this isn't working anymore. Mm-hmm. It's lifeless. It's cold. We're just going through the mm-hmm. rhythm. We're just going through the routine. We don't even know why we're doing this. And so you get this rejection, is tossing all that away. You come to postmodern thought. So yeah. what you get is not just, it's not just some things that are tossed aside, but it's an entire way of thinking, mm-hmm. the postmodern thought. Mm-hmm. And the postmodern says, look, I'm looking for what works for me because that mm-hmm. other was not working. Mm-hmm. I don't see it applying and yeah. working for my benefit. And then you get this idea where, well, I'm really only interested in me and my group and my community. I'm comfortable with, there are many different ways of truth. I'm comfortable with tolerance. You have your thing. I've got my thing. I'm comfortable in letting others do what they want. And please don't impose your views upon yeah. me. Again, all of this, I think, is a reaction to modern thought reaching mm-hmm. its apex of cold, harsh reality.
Yeah. And again, like, I think you see a lot of this stuff like 60s, 70s, like the sexual revolution, drugs. Mm-hmm. Give me the experiences. Mm-hmm. I want to feel something. I want to see something I haven't seen before. Whereas in the 40s and 50s, you have people who's like, I don't want you to experience the things that I've experienced. Right. And so it's like a lockdown of then. And then the 60s, 70s, 80s, even kind of, you know, you have all of that, like make love, not war, and all those things that
exactly.
start popping up. And right. and it's the way now people are assuming life to be, is like, hey, what if, it's like the, just like the small idea of like, hey, what if we weren't as much like we were
right.
yesterday and we yeah. were a little bit different today, kind of. And then it eventually has transpired into like, what if nothing is even true at all? You know, it's like,
yeah. And again, now there's a whole way of thinking that's being mm-hmm. born into a generation mm-hmm. and then a second generation on top of that, yeah. where they say, look, I'm casting off all that stuff, all yeah. that stuff of the past. I want to think for myself. It doesn't matter to me what information you have, because I've got just as much information. I've got mm-hmm. the internet.
And experience.
Yeah. I've got 7 websites to prove my thing is true, even yeah. though you have 7 websites to prove your thing is true.
Exactly. So therefore, if we have equal information, then it might as well just be.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool. Your way is the old way. I want the new way.
Yeah.
And so this becomes the postmodern thought.
Yes. And it becomes very tough whenever it comes to issues of like literally life.
Yes.
What is life? When mm-hmm. does life start? You know, all those things. Mm-hmm. When it comes to issues like morality or issues like relationships or faith and social mm-hmm. order, you have these huge concepts and structures and, yep. you know, like, things that make societies function.
Yep.
And people are like, but what if it wasn't though?
Right.
You know,
right.
it's like, well, yeah. what if we swapped it out?
Because my experience was it didn't work.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So my experience must then trump whatever fixed thing there might be.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well,
that's a whole thing right there.
Yeah. So, that's another thing.
Yeah. So those who think with a postmodern mindset don't like it when others challenge their views, right? Yeah, so yeah. if you have the postmodern mindset of like, I'm going to do something different, I'm going to mm-hmm. change what has happened, mm-hmm. and someone's like, you shouldn't do that. It's like, guess what? I'm going to do it 10 times more.
You know? Just like, because you said that.
Exactly, yeah. yeah. Or some other things, if people who have the postmodern mindset, they're suspicious of those who have singular truth as an answer.
Yeah.
You know, there's a sense of like,
it's so crazy.
What's going on with
yeah.
you?
Yeah. You know, from where I come from, the point is you finally make this singular truth statement that kind of trumps all of the statements and boom, mm-hmm. you win, you know, yeah. kind of deal. But
these days
you can't do that with postmodern yeah. thought.
These days you just lost someone essentially.
Yeah. Because you threw down a singular objective truth. They're out.
Yeah, those people are saying, see ya.
Yeah.
Again, people who have the postmodern mindset, they're rejecting institutions like we've been talking about, church, business, yep. school, law, yep. you know, marriage, all that kind of stuff. And, yep. and then they see modern thinkers, those who think in the modern thought of objective truths mm-hmm. as bigots or narrow-minded people, mm-hmm. you know, all of the terms that you hear, that's what the person who thinks with the postmodern mindset is probably having those thoughts.
Yeah. So it's interesting because, you know, coming out of the Christian era that I came from, it's coming to the end of the modern thought, I guess, in the 90s, 2000s. Mm-hmm. But you find in that era, even evangelism and the way of sharing your faith is based on presenting proof and facts. In fact, in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, Christians are doing all they can to try to scientifically prove what the Bible says. They're trying to scientifically prove that creation is true. Mm-hmm. They're trying to scientifically prove the Bible is accurate.
Yeah.
And they're doing this all in hopes of proving, you know, a generation. But sadly, the cultural thought changes about that time. Mm-hmm. And so you get books which, like Evidence That Demands a Verdict, Case for Christ, Classic Apologetics, all of those. They had their place, but I'm not sure that it has that place anymore. And so it's sad because even I was involved in Christian education for a while, and the emphasis seemed to be on we need to equip students so when they go to college, they can stand up to their professors when it comes to issues like
God's not dead.
Yeah, yeah, evolution versus creation, all of that. And they equipped them for those debates in the classroom, but what they didn't equip them for was what was going to happen outside the classroom.
Yeah.
What was going to happen in the back of a car or in a back room or in a park or in a dorm room where all of a sudden the realities of life were coming into bear and their faith wasn't equipped. They were ready to answer some kind of issue about creationism.
I can tell you about Noah's Ark.
Yeah. But when all of a sudden temptation was on them, they didn't know how to deal with that. Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah.
So you see this kind of, you know, idea of the modern approach even not working as effectively. Yeah.
Having great information.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was going to say. We are not saying we need to scrap all of those resources. You know,
That's
not the case. Because, because those are still great resources. And I think they are effective.
And for some people, they can be very effective.
Yeah. And I think it's especially as a person who is a believer, I think it's extra awesome reading that stuff and being like, wow, this gives an awesome framework for seeing the world through a Christian perspective.
Right.
However, I would not say it is an effective evangelistic tool for someone who is of postmodern thinking, someone who is of relative truth, someone who is of, you know, hey, I've got my own experiences and you can't actually tell anything because I have my own experiences. They're not going to be like, oh, wait, hold on. You're telling me Noah's Ark was actually, I'll believe in Christ. It's like,
For someone in postmodern thinking who's already developed their truth and you approach them with seven reasons why the Bible is true, I don't know that that has an impact on them.
Because true is for you.
Yeah. You know, it's like, help yourself to all that, they would say. Yeah.
They'd be like, that's awesome. You believe that. I just don't believe that way.
Yeah. I've got seven experiential reasons why it's not true.
Yeah.
They would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I think it's important to realize also at this point that modern thinking, like we're talking about, the objective truth, the fixed, the structured, modern thinking does not equal Christian. It does not equal Christian thinking.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we live in a post-Christian culture. And yes, I'd say the percentage of Christians, or at least those who said, I'm a Christian, was higher in decades prior.
Yeah.
But it's not like, we left modern thinking. Therefore, Christianity is done for.
Right.
Because if that's the case, you know, Christianity is just as good as the era you're in. And that's not the case.
Well, and if Christian thinking was modern thinking, then there would have been a lot more revival in the modern era.
That's truth.
And we come down to the end of the modern era, and that's not the case. You find a generation saying, hey, I'm casting all that stuff off.
Yeah.
You get the postmodern thought because it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's fascinating. I'm glad you stayed with us this long in the podcast. I hope you'll stay a little bit longer because we haven't got to our real application point. We're really just laying the foundation here. So what's fascinating, again, when I go back to the architecture side of the end of modern and in the beginning of postmodern, is the modern era, the end of it is architects like Le Corbusier is one I was familiar with. And again, they're building these white stark boxes. And mm-hmm. most people would look at that and say, and no way I'd ever live in that. Mm-hmm. Because it was, though it was architecturally sound, though it had design elements that could not be debated, they were flawless, they all lined up, they were beautiful in mm-hmm. form and simplistic and pure, mm-hmm. they were empty. No one wanted to live in it because it was so stark, white, and cold. Hmm. I thought, man, so it's kind of the point of the end of modern thought mm-hmm. without the reality of Jesus in it, the reality of faith in it. And so modern architecture comes along and all of a sudden it has all these warm browns and reds and golds and flowing forms and circles and spaces that are very feel oriented. It was such a picture. Now that I see it, you know, it's like, okay, this is where you see art copying life, really. Mm-hmm. And you see even what was happening in the church. I think modern era reaches this place where some churches, they were so pure in what they said they believed, so strong in what they were holding to. It almost came across like a modern architecture building. It was cold. It was lifeless. But man, the form sure looked nice. Mm-hmm. And out of that comes another generation that says, you know, I'm not interested in any of that stuff. I'm not interested in your form because it's lifeless. I'm not interested in your rules because it's cold. Mm-hmm. And so you get into this postmodern era. Yeah. So it kind of sets the stage again for this fact that we can't really say modern equals Christian, postmodern mm-hmm. equals non-Christian.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's important today.
Yeah, so I think then the question has to be, so what are we supposed to do when we have a conversation with someone who doesn't believe in a fixed truth? You can't go back and forth all day long on, well, this is truth. Well, I don't think it is. Well, this is the truth. Well, I don't think it is. Well, literally,
it is. No, it isn't.
Literally circles at that point,
right,
you know?
Right.
So faith in Jesus has been rooted in fixed, unchanging, universal truth, eternal truth, literally forever because it's eternal.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And so it's not like, okay, well, we should change up the truths that we're saying. No, it's the same. You know, just because there's postmodern thinking doesn't mean that it's true. So there's that.
Well, and what we know of is that Jesus made some pretty narrow claims.
Yeah.
You know, we know those mm-hmm. experiences as well. That mm-hmm. He said he is the way and the truth and the life. Mm-hmm. He said that no one comes to the Father unless they come through him. Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds pretty narrow and mm-hmm. rigid and form oriented. You have to repent of your ways if you want to follow him. You have to leave that all behind. You have to deny yourself, take up your cross. And then not to mention that now as Christians, we live in this way of understanding faith that is truth-based. We want to tell people mm-hmm. about the truth. We want people to learn to live the way we live. We want people to follow Jesus, and we want to learn, as we want them to learn, truth upon truth, faith upon faith, and mm-hmm. we value information about the Bible, and we value the Bible. So it just brings us to a very interesting place. How do you have a conversation about fixed truth with someone who doesn't believe in it?
Yeah.
How do you share the gospel even? Mm-hmm. How do you even have a conversation about what's happening in the world, in the news, in our life, when there's no longer fixed truth? How do you talk to someone who says true for you but not for me? And then even amongst Christians, how do you know what to say when someone that's a believer, maybe in the church, maybe even in family, has a different view than you do on politics and government, relationships, finances, marriage, creation, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you try to talk facts to them, but facts don't matter to them.
Yeah,
what do you do in that situation?
I mean, those are literally the questions of the day. Like all of those, if we don't have answers to those, if we can't figure out how to respond to those, we are only headed downhill.
That's true.
You know, if we and you listening mm-hmm. Don't take some responsibility in saying, okay, I want to know how to reach, share, discuss, have a conversation with someone who does not believe in fixed truths, and I want to be able to communicate the truth to them. Right? Again, like we will struggle to exist as a church if we just say, well, hey, tough for them. We're just going to keep on sticking it out with the people we already have.
Yep.
Well, guess what? You're not reaching the next generation.
Yep.
That church is going to die.
That's correct.
That church is just going to die if you don't ever focus on reaching the next generation. That's correct. And there will be no passing on of faith to the next generation. You know,
right.
Not just like the church will die, but faith would cease from us to the next generation if we did not do our part.
Yeah, it's true. So let's start with some things that we know about postmodern thinkers. Mm-hmm. We know they are not interested in you just walking up and telling them you're wrong.
Not many people are.
I'm going to say, I'm not sure that works for anybody, but.
But especially under someone who's like, there's no fixed truth.
Yeah. We also know about postmoderns that they do value a story. Mm-hmm. So they will listen to a story. They'll listen to anybody's story. It doesn't matter who you are. Mm-hmm. Not just people like them, but they'll listen to anyone's story who will tell it as a genuine story without trying to punch them in the face with their story.
Yeah.
We also know about postmoderns that they are interested in their life. They're interested in what's going on with them. Maybe not a whole lot further than that, but they're interested in their what's going on with them.
That is what they have been taught is to be supreme. That is what they have been not just taught, but modeled.
True.
As to what is supreme.
They also value being listened to.
Yeah.
They want to hear your story, but they want to tell their story. Mm-hmm. So you can't just say, well, that is absolute insanity. I mean, if you do, then just pack it up. You know, we're done here. You're not going to be able to pass on faith. You're not going to be able to talk to your kids, your grandkids, or the next generation, because I promise you they're growing up in this, whether they're in a church or not.
Yeah, and to just complain about it does literally nothing.
That's true. So I think our goal here has always been, is to say, okay, well, what does the Bible say about this? Is there a place for this? Is there an answer to what's happening, and what are we supposed to do about it? I think so much of this just hinges on this idea that if you've come out of the modern era, you've got to at least allow for the possibility that there's another way of thinking
that might be the
besides your own, that there's another way besides just fact plus fact equals conclusion.
Yeah. Or my experience is the truth.
Yeah.
Because that's another factor seems to be from my take as one who is a part of Gen Z, one who has grown up in the postmodern world, is that, you know, someone who grew up in the modern way of thinking has the thought of like, well, everyone just needs to do what I did or experience what I experienced, do the same things I did, then you'll have the same outcomes as me.
Yes.
It's like, sorry, don't think that's
possible. It's impossible. You know? it's impossible.
Yeah.
So back to the Bible then, as a book of truth and a book of experiences. So the Gospel of John tells a story about a man who was blind, and that man was born blind. One day, Jesus meets him, and he performs a miracle for the man, but he does it in a very unusual way. Jesus spits in the dirt. He makes this mud, he puts it on his eyes, and then he tells him to go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is unusual. That's not how Jesus did it every time.
Yeah.
He does it for this man this way. And the man sees. Well, as he begins to celebrate his being able to see, it ignites kind of this firestorm. Mm-hmm. The Pharisees hear all of this. They're not pleased with Jesus anyway, but they find this man who's been healed of his blindness, and they start interrogating him. How did this happen? Who did this? Where were you? What's going on?
Yeah.
Where is he now? And the man, the blind man says, I don't know. I don't know the answers to all the questions. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't stop them. They just keep going. They pull him in to a larger group. They find out that this happened on the Sabbath, which is, incredible offense to the Pharisees, who are very rigid mm-hmm. maybe like
modern
thinkers. Have, there's a way that it has to be done. And what's happening is they are coming to the end mm-hmm. of their way because Jesus comes and presents another way. It's almost like postmodern thought interrupts mm-hmm. modern thought. Mm-hmm.
Not so, that Jesus was postmodern and saying the truth is relative.
Exactly. Not saying that. So they continue to really go after him with questions. You know, who is he? How can he do these things? Is he must be a sinner. He must be a devil because you can't do this and you can't be from God and do this on the Sabbath. And they just keep going after him for this. Mm-hmm. And it's not enough. They call the man's parents in. They're questioning him. They want more information. How did this happen? Was he really born blind first? And then now, what happens now? And his parents didn't know the answers to all of this of, you know, who was this? Why did this happen? What right did he have doing this on a Sabbath day? And all of this. You get down to, and this is all happening in the Gospel of John, and you get down to verse, 25 in the story. And it says that this man, you can tell he's just kind of reaching his point of frustration. And he finally answers the Pharisees. And he says, look, whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, though I was blind, now I see. So he doesn't have all the answers. Yeah. He doesn't have the facts. He can't line out the theological explanation. He can't give them 13 reasons why this is true. Mm-hmm. The scientific proof of how mm-hmm. spit and mud equal pool Siloam equal mm-hmm. being able to see.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any of that. Mm-hmm. He just says, I'm just going to tell you my story. My story is I was blind. Mm-hmm. Now I see.
This man healed me.
Yeah.
The end.
This is interesting yeah. because I think it gives here a clear picture that there is a place for the experiential story that has power. And especially in this day and age, and in a day and age when maybe the form has reached its limit and there's another way now of declaring the gospel to a generation. So again, this, I'm just begging you, please stay with us, especially if you're 40 plus and you're, this is just hurting your head to even think about. I understand. So if we're going to reach people who think differently than us, especially those in the postmodern era, mm-hmm. we've got to have to do some things. We're going to have to set aside our logic for just a moment.
Yeah.
This way of thinking that says, I need A plus B plus C plus D to equal this. Mm-hmm. You're going to need to set aside your rock solid argument that you've got, that mm-hmm. you have formulated in your mind for how you would convince someone else that mm-hmm. there were 7 literal days of creation or that, mm-hmm. you know, the Bible is true and is without error or yeah. that the ark really did exist mm-hmm. or that Jesus is going to return on the X date.
Yeah.
You kind of got to set all of that aside for just a moment. I'm not asking you to set aside truth. I'm just asking you yeah. to set aside the prove your point by debate approach or trying to always win the argument with your facts.
I'm not texting. I am trying to find a verse real quick.
Okay. you've got to set aside trying to win the debate by your points, and you have to try to set aside winning by proving someone wrong.
Yep.
Now, this is, I understand. Again, I know this. If you're a modern thinker, this is making you nervous. You're like, mm-hmm. wait a minute. Are you suggesting that we just remove all truth? Are you suggesting that the Bible is not enough? Are you suggesting that faith is not in the truth? I'm not suggesting any of that. I'm just saying, like the blind man, it may be that we've come to a day where we need to set aside the way we have done it, and there may be a different way mm-hmm. of communicating the same powerful message of mm-hmm. the gospel, the same life-transforming power of Jesus mm-hmm. in a different way mm-hmm. that may be even more powerful in this day than any other approach.
Yeah. It would be super awesome if like one of the apostles wrote on this kind of an idea, which they did actually.
Oh.
So this is Apostle Paul. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 4 says this, "My message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words." Okay, so he goes and he preaches to these people in Corinth, and he's saying, my preaching wasn't to try to logically convince every single person.
True.
It wasn't to try to persuade them. It wasn't just with such great wisdom and insight into, you know, here's 32 reasons actually why you should be a believer.
Right.
It says, but my message, my preaching was with a demonstration of the Spirit's power.
Mm.
Demonstrating.
Yeah.
Telling the story.
Yeah.
Communicating.
Experiential.
Experiencing.
Yep.
The Spirit's power. Demonstrating it.
Yep.
Showing it to others.
Yep.
Showing from his own life.
Yep.
What the Spirit had done in him.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so in this, I think that's our goal today is not, we don't need to convince people by wisdom.
Yep.
We don't need to convince people by logic.
Right.
You know, and that's what I've heard someone say, like if someone is saved only by facts, they can be convinced also by facts to leave.
Yeah.
But if there is a, oh, I've experienced this from the Spirit and the Spirit lives in me, then what else can you say? I was blind, now I see.
Yeah.
It's not like I was blind, now I see. Well, actually, I don't remember if I saw or not. Maybe I'm still blind. I don't. No, it's not that. But it is, this is literally what happened in my life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Now, I'll also say, again, I am not saying like Andy Stanley that I'm tossing out the Bible, tossing out the need for the New Testament, and saying we only rely on our experiences these days. I'm not saying that at all. I still hold to the same truth, the solid truth of Scripture that is unchanging, and it is essential, that faith is still essential. Repentance is still essential. Mm-hmm. But what if there's another way of communicating that today to a different generation than what we have been using in the past?
Absolutely.
Let's start down this line then. Okay, how do you relate then to someone who's of postmodern thought who denies the existence of fixed truth? I'd say, one, we know story is important to them. You will gain an audience if you will listen to their story.
That's truth.
They want to tell their story. So let them talk.
Yeah.
Ask them questions.
Yeah.
Not to try to trap them.
Yeah.
Not to try to point out where they're wrong.
Yeah.
But to hear their story.
Mm-hmm.
And
actually listen to it. Not listen for your words in it. Listen for where you can talk.
Yeah, listen for how you can shut them down.
No.
This is your ticket to their heart, basically. Mm-hmm. You want to open the door, you listen. And then, if you'll do that, you'll get to the moment where you can tell them your story. Now, you have to listen to their story before you can tell your story. Your story of faith. And while it is important that you tell your story that might have happened to you a decade ago, or four decades ago, I think more importantly, it's essential that you tell them the most recent story. What is the fresh thing that God is changing in you? How is He active right now in an area of your life? What is the most recent area that He has changed you? That's real. Mm-hmm. And they want to know. They want to know, where did this Jesus you talk about, I don't want to hear just some theological experience you had. I want to hear a real life experience, because they don't, those are separate things to them, even though they're not. To them it is. So they want to hear, where's the thing where you've been in pain? Where's the thing that's been hard? Where's the thing that's been overwhelming? Mm-hmm. And Jesus has met you in it and He's changed you in it. Where's the relevancy in all of this? And where's the relational impact in this? What is this Jesus doing that you talk about? What is He doing to change how you think, how you relate now? I think that kind of fresh story is a direct line right to their heart, because a postmodern will not argue with you about your story. to them, every individual's story is sacred. Yeah. That is what's sacred.
Yeah.
They might not consider fixed truth sacred, but a person's story is sacred. Mm-hmm. So if you can tell the story of here's what Jesus is doing in me, mm-hmm. not did, but is, and it's relevant. Here's where Jesus is freeing me from depression, anxiety, mm-hmm. addiction, self-hatred, racing thoughts, mm-hmm. uncontrollable anger, sexual identity issues, toxic personality, religious exhaustion. Mm-hmm. Here's where he's making me new. Here's where he's changing me. Mm-hmm. If you can tell that story that's recent, that's real, that's revolutionary, that is not just because you're taking a medication, not just because you watched some recent TED talk, but it's something unbelievably revolutionary, they will hear you.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what's most powerful in this day. That's what Definitely. I'm saying. It's different. That's not just quoting 7 steps of the gospel to them. Mm-hmm. This is telling your story that includes the gospel, but it is wrapped in flesh. How about that?
Yeah.
Truth came wrapped in flesh. Yep. Ever heard of that before?
Yep.
So here it is in our day. This is the way that the Spirit of God is working in this generation.
Definitely. So there's two resources I'll reference from an author. His name's Greg Kokel. He's an apologist, but very way cutting edge on this topic right here. Mm. And is writing books. Two of them, it's called Tactics and Street Smarts. I don't know if you've heard of those before, but they're awesome. They're on mm-hmm. Amazon, all sorts of stuff. But he lays out, and specifically in Street Smarts, dialogues of how to talk to someone about or someone who has postmodern thinking, someone mm-hmm. who doesn't believe in objective truth. Mm-hmm. And he's going to talk you, basically show you what a conversation might look like. And it's awesome because none of it is the idea of drive-by evangelism mm-hmm. of let me just come in and mm-hmm. drop some bombs on you and then just get out of here. It's shotgun evangelism of here's 52 different reasons why, catch you around. I hope you believe in all these now, but it's let me get invested in your life and ask you some questions mm-hmm. and then you can ask me questions and then we're going to have a conversation about this because especially today, I think this has always been the truth, but especially today, you don't see conversions happening outside of relationships.
It's true.
If you want to see someone converted, you better relate to them mm-hmm. as though they are a human being worthy of redemption.
Yep. It's true.
And
you show where you have walked in some failure.
That's the biggest thing is shown through the lens of hey, I'm not perfect, but I am redeemed,
And this whole approach, we have walked in some of this here recently at Vertical. Mm-hmm. So I preach God's word. I preach it as truth. I attempt to be creative, mm-hmm. direct, bold,
and
informative.
Exclusive at the same time. This is the truth. There's
exactly.
Not one of a million.
Yeah, exactly.
The truth, yeah.
But we do also major on application. We're going to always take a truth and draw it right into some applications in life mm-hmm. and how it is intended to change us. And here's what we've done, though. As that has happened, people will come and tell us their stories. Hey, here's what God's doing in my life. And so we have intentionally jumped on that moment and said, well, come up on stage and tell me, let's tell the story. Let's set up in a couple of weeks. We're going to tell the story. And I'll usually do that in interview format, but we tell the story. And then we'll preach some more, a couple of weeks, then we'll tell another story. Mm-hmm. And that mix of truth with story, that we have seen that to be more impactful than just preach.
Yeah.
Or just information. When you do preaching, and then you tell stories, it is impacting people in this day, in this mm-hmm. time. And even just for me personally, when I stop and tell a story about where I have, walked in some struggles or maybe still am walking through some struggles, it's funny. People will come to me more often and say, I really appreciate what you said the other day about dealing mm-hmm. with anxiety. That really, or that you and Heather are still working through some areas in your marriage. People will come and say something to me more about those moments than anything else.
Yeah.
because I think there's an identification in the moment and a connection with this whole era in which we live today. And as a result, we have seen God move in more dramatic ways that follow that. Yeah. You'd let someone tell their story. There's this instant identification in the room.
Yeah.
Then someone else says, well, I'm going to try that. I'm going to apply that. And they own it and they apply it. And then there's another story. And stories breed stories, mm-hmm. good stories. Mm-hmm. So good. It just, I think it brings us like, okay, well then what does this mean for us then as Christians in this day? I think it comes down to this question. What's the recent fresh thing God is doing in your life right now? What is that thing? Because that thing, that moment, that mm-hmm. space has power. Mm-hmm. Power greater than you imagine. And to be able to talk about that, to say, here's where I'm weak, here's where Jesus is meeting me, mm-hmm. and here's what's happening. That's powerful.
Yeah.
And it's important that you and I have that kind of relevant, recent story. I mean, almost to the point, like I would say, like, you should really consider what's going on in your life if you don't have a recent story. Yeah. If you don't have something fresh to say, here's what's being changed in me, then
yeah.
you kind of just stop and evaluate life yeah. because, I mean, if this is what God is doing in us, mm-hmm. then there ought to be some evidence. I mean, 2 Corinthians 3:18 says that with unveiled face, we're beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord. And we're being transformed into the same image from glory to glory. Ongoing transformation. It keeps happening more and more. This is the evidence that you believe and are obeying. And this is what God is doing in us. He's conforming us to the image of his Son. So if he is actively doing that in us, then there ought to be some demonstration of that in us. Mm-hmm. And I just think, how fascinating and how like God to drive the church and the culture to a place where the thing that would be the most powerful is for each one of us to have a very real life story of what God is doing in us. And so that good. Speak loudest yes. today.
Yeah.
So don't look at the postmodern thought or thinker and say, man, you're such a loser. You're yep. not like me.
Yep.
Don't. That's arrogant.
Yeah.
Instead, turn back to, okay, what is the fresh thing in me? What's the new thing that God's doing in me? Mm-hmm. And then be ready to tell that. Peter says, be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Now, modern thought used to say, oh, well, that means you better have all your basic
reasons.
Bible doctrines lined out. You better have seven reasons why the Bible's yep. true. You better be able to prove, you know, that the earth was created in 7 days. Mm-hmm. You better be able to prove. Mm-hmm. There's a place for that, but the proof today is in the pudding of your life.
That's true. Yep.
Tell the story. Tell the mm-hmm. story of your life, the fresh, mm-hmm. the most recent, the most relevant, the most revolutionary thing God's doing in your life. Tell that story
yeah.
and watch what God does next. He
so
will move through that.
Yep.
Man.
Fire me up.
It's good stuff. Good stuff.
It's good
well,
stuff.
That is how you talk to someone
yes.
who doesn't believe in fixed truth.
Yeah.
And the scripture so helps us with that. The Spirit of God can help us with that. Mm-hmm. We're seeing the results of doing that, and I just encourage you to do that as well. And then, man, come check out what God is doing yeah, in Vertical. We're
definitely.
Seeing it every week. We're looking to tell the story in some way, someone's story in some way. Here's the fresh, here's the real, here's the relevant, here's the revolutionary that Jesus is doing alive today in us. So, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for sticking all the way through. I told you it was going to be a good one. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
You may have to listen a couple of times to take it all in. I've had yeah. to think through it a lot myself just yep. in processing through it. So
good.
Thanks for joining us as we keep lifting him up and living him out.